This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. And doesn't it still feel weird? A World Cup in the middle of the domestic season. Trying to work out how to get back from Bloomfield Road, Sinsel Bank, Spotland, or wherever you might be going this coming weekend in time to watch England play in a World Cup quarterfinal. But that's the situation we find ourselves in as the Skybet Championship returns and this man resets his sat-nav from Hertfordshire to Bedfordshire.
So I've never taken over anywhere, you know, halfway through a season before, but what we're doing, we're taking over something that's already going pretty well, a well-oiled machine.
Plus, we'll hear from one of the lower league's biggest names limbering up for another promotion push.
If you're not at your best, you can be turned over by anyone, but sometimes even if you are at your best, a team can be really dogged, really stubborn. So it's about managing your way through games.
It's the official EFL podcast. Our first guest on this episode previously joined us a week into the current season. He just swapped leading Forest Green Rovers to last season's Skybet League 2 title for trying to restore the fortunes of Skybet Championship returnees Watford. 10 games later, like so many before him, he'd departed Vicarage Road. Then 2 months later, Rob Edwards became the man Luton Town turned to replace Nathan Jones, a 19-mile journey between historical rivals. I could see you looking a little bit worried as to what my first question is going to be. Did that at any point come up in the chat with Luton from their perspective, from your perspective? What would both sets of fans think, etc.?
It did, Clem. I think it had to. You know, our football club is obviously, you know, owned by supporters of the football club and the board are supporters. So they, you know, they had to be sure as well. So I think, you know, they'd spoken to a lot of people and they wanted to, obviously we had to speak to make sure everyone was right with it and okay. But I'm really pleased that they deemed me to be the right person or to come in and you know, be a part of this, because it's a special place, a special club. But of course we had to, we had quite a lot of discussions about what had gone on before. But I think, if we're being honest, you know, the opportunity, and we spoke about it, you know, back at the beginning of the season, as you touched on there, it was an amazing opportunity for us to go into, I say us, Richie and I, to go in at Watford. And okay, you know, it was very, very short. We feel now we've got somewhere that will give us that support and hopefully a little bit more time.
Has it changed you, the Watford experience?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't have any regrets. I'm really, really honest, don't have any regrets. I think it was a tough period because there was a lot going on, you know, on and off the pitch. You know, transfer window was very, very busy and hectic. We'd have obviously liked to won more games, but we weren't doing too bad. You know what I mean? So in terms of results, it's very early on, and we were trying to change. We were trying to shift the culture. I mean, you know, the year before hadn't been great in the Prem. I know it was in the Premier League. It was difficult for them to win games, and so my main focus was to try and shift that culture, that environment, to a winning environment, a winning culture. And you know, that can take a bit of a while, but I don't think it's changed me. You know, I know football can be ruthless when you're in this game. It happens, doesn't it, Clem? And like I said, we went in with our eyes wide open. We knew that it could be the case at Watford. We hope it wouldn't be, and I think everyone that goes there believes in themselves and backs themselves to be able to get some time there. But you know, unfortunately, we couldn't.
Yeah. No. I mean, I guess. Sorry, I've forgotten the circumstances. You did have obviously a spell in charge of non-league Telford. Did you get the boot there, or did you leave of your own volition? I mean, was this the first time you had tasted having the rug pulled from under you?
As a manager or head coach, yeah. When, you know, it happened just before I took the Telford job at Wolves, when Nuno and his staff came in. I was part of the first, you know, the first team coach at Wolves. So there's five or six of us there that lost our jobs. But I was lucky enough to come back in a year later after Telford. So no, it's the first time it's happened to me. You know, and it's happened to almost every manager, hasn't it? And you know, so I'm not alone there. No, so it's something that you try and learn from. You try and think, okay, what do I take from that experience? What can I do better? You know, what did we do well, even as well? You try and take those things and bring them to the next one, Clem.
Yeah. But, you know, it is said that some of the senior managers kind of ring you the day it's happened or the day after and say, oh, you're a proper manager now that you've tasted that.
Yeah, I think a few people had said that. I think a few people, you know, I got lots of nice messages from people. And, you know, it's good that the footballing community, I suppose, comes together. And whether it's yourself or, you know, people in the you know, journalists or in the media, or whether it's fellow managers and or people, friends that are in the game, it's nice that you get a lot of kind messages. And yeah, look, it happens. We all know that. We all know it's not through a lack of effort and a lack of trying. Sometimes things that just don't work out. And I suppose the frustrating thing about that one was we'll never really know if it would have worked out, you know, in a way. But there's no point in dwelling on it.
No, is it a tough challenge to get your messaging right in your position now? Because on the one hand, obviously you've got to say all the right things for your new employers. They are where your loyalty lies. By the same token, I always think when you managers leave jobs, you're always so dignified and careful for whatever reason, but you're always so dignified about being careful with your words about your last employer. So does that leave you with a little bit of a treading on eggshells these first few weeks until you get a few games under your belt with Luton saying the right things?
I think I'll always try and say the right. I want to be respectful. There's a lot of brilliant people at Watford and people that are in football. You know, every football club there's great people there. So I'll always be respectful, and I am thankful for that opportunity, as brief as it was. You know, I'm frustrated and disappointed that it didn't go, you know, it didn't last longer. But without that, I wouldn't be in this position now. And I've got to be honest, it's only a couple of weeks in. I'm delighted to be here. No, I'm lovely, you know, really, really early days, and we haven't had a game yet. But it's got a fantastic feel about it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've had a topsy-turvy couple of months, haven't you? Because for all you say, you got phone calls of support. You were also linked to just about every job that came up as well, which I guess keeps you buoyant and lets you feel that the market still appreciates you and doesn't see your departure from your last employers necessarily in the same light that the hierarchy there did. So were you a busy old fella over those 6-7 weeks up and down the motorway? A few chats.
Yeah, there's a few chats, a few conversations, which was nice. You're right. The phone wasn't silent for a few weeks, which was great. So, you know, it's the first, like we said before, it's the first time it's happened to me as a head coach or a manager. So you're not fully sure how to deal with that time. You know, obviously I was doing it, obviously, and we got an 8-year-old son and a couple of old, we got a 17-year-old and a 15-year-old. So the girls walk themselves to school, but it's nice to do the school run a few times with a little man and take him and make sandwiches. But then you're not sure how long that's going to go on for. So people, you know, think, right, do we go away? Should we try and get a week away or something like that? But we couldn't really. I had a few conversations with one or two clubs, and then you're sort of thinking, okay, something could happen. So yeah, it was a bit of a strange time, but nice to speak to other people. Nice, like you said, to be in those conversations, because you never know. And I got at some games and spoke to some people, had some good meetings. So, and it was only, you know, whatever it was, 5 or 6 weeks in the end, I think, something like that. So it wasn't too long. So it was a chance to refresh a little bit before all the madness begins again.
Yeah. Was it important to get this one right? Was it important that you did feel you were putting your square peg into a square hole and not into a round one?
Yeah, you're right, Clem. The next one for us had to be somewhere where we feel we'd get, you know, that support. And of course, we've got to you know, we've got to do the business. We've got to work extremely hard. There's got to be a plan. We've got to be good people. You know, I'd like to think we do all those things. But it was important to for us to be able to pick our owners and the people we're going to work for and with as much as they're picking us.
You've got big shoes to fill, obviously, and a guy that helped to reposition the club along with a lot of other people behind the scenes, but a guy in Nathan Jones that helped to reposition the club from the lower end of League Two to playoffs to get into the Premier League last year. The conversation with the owners there, they obviously appreciate that you will want to put your own stamp on, but maybe move it on from the position you inherit it rather than bearing in mind where it was a few years ago. Does that make sense as a question?
Yeah, it does make sense. And I think it's something that we've spoken about when I had the initial conversations with the people at the club anyway, that we've got to be really respectful of the brilliant work that Nathan, Chris and Alan had done with everyone else here at the football club as well. So I've never taken over anywhere, you know, halfway through a season before. But what we're doing, we're taking over something that's already going pretty well, a well-oiled machine, you know, a team that got in the playoffs last year, a team that's 1 point or so off the playoffs this season. So this doesn't need ripping up and starting again. It's being respectful of and continuing to do all the really good things that everyone does here, players and staff. And then you're right, trying to then gradually evolve and try and improve. Because Nathan, if he'd stayed here, we want to carry on to improve and move things forward. Anyway, that's what we all want to do. So we all want to try and grow and keep improving as players, as individuals, and that's also us as people and coaches as well.
I mean, he had this jack-in-the-box personality on the touchline. Is there any possibility that kind of some of the performances are hewn in the passion and the energy of the manager, that it's one of the characteristics of the mix that you inherit? And is that a situation you're mindful of as well? You know, maybe a bad performance and, you know what Nathan was like. I used to message him and say, you're going to spontaneously combust if you're not careful. Some teams need it sometimes, Rob, don't they? That they need to see the manager jumping up and down on the touchlines. Are you kind of aware of that dynamic within the mix?
I'm aware of elements of how Nathan would have worked, but obviously I've got to be myself and I've got to be me as well. And I've said that from day one to the players and the staff, that, like I said, I want to be able to keep that intensity, the way that we play. I want to be able to keep that. And that's in our DNA as a football club. You know, that grit and the passion that the players show and the football, the supporters show, and they love. We need to keep that. So that remains. And then, as I say, I have to then be me. So I'll have to try and gauge it and do what I do and try and understand at times there might be games where we've got to go from, and I might have to be more animated than others. But that's then down to me. What I hope is that the way we work in the week and the training and the messages that we get across, the players know that's what they're about and what we're about anyway. But of course, I think our job as coaches, as managers, is to recognise, you know, what the players need at that particular moment. Do you know what I mean, Clem? So, you know, there is times where, okay, I've got to go after them here. And I'm going to have to be animated. The jacket might be off and it's right, you know, I'm halfway down the touchline. Or there might be a time to just be, okay, I can be chilled. The lads are at it. They've got it in hand. They know what they're doing and we can be calm.
Yeah. It's one of those techniques, isn't it, that I don't think people fully appreciate. I think that sometimes they think when a manager is jumping up and down on the touchline, it's because they're unhappy. But some managers do it for an effect. It becomes part of the characteristic of getting a performance.
I think so. I think you can play. There's elements where you can, and I think you see some of the top ones do it. They can play to the crowd. They get the crowd going, and becomes a bit of a performance to ignite something and get something going. If there's a lack of energy or there's a lethargy in the game or whatever, you see it sometimes on the pitch. You know, you can spark a game into life with a tackle or something. You know, especially in England, it can really start something. So, yeah. I think we can see that, especially now with the quality, the calibre of the coaches that we've got right the way through the football pyramid, from the top, you know, all the way through. and I've experienced a lot of that now. You definitely sometimes there's a tactical battle on the touchline as well, and who can have that effect. And so especially when we experienced it in League Two, you can sometimes have more of an effect because people can hear you more. So it was a little bit easier there to affect the game from the touchline.
Rob, do you mind sharing with us a little bit, maybe the first encounter with the players? I know you've had, I don't know whether you'd inherited a situation where they were off for a week or 10 days because of the World Cup break, but when you got them all together, is that a nerve-wracking moment when you're facing them for the first time? Are you aware of the fact you need to get the tone, pitch perfect with that first encounter, or did you do it as individuals?
No, I spoke to them as a group, and then I'm still trying to pick off individuals as we go now, and you continue to do that right the way throughout because it's important to have that that rapport with the players. But you want to get the tone right, Clem, of course, and I was really aware of that. So there's always a few butterflies because you're speaking to a new group and you're aware of all the players, and I might have spoken to one or two of them on the phone or actually played with one or two of them, but now I'm in this position and I'm sat right there.
Who have you played with?
Well, so Jordan Clark was a young lad at Barnsley right towards the end of my career. And then Henry Lansbury and I were both on loan at Norwich together as well, the year that they went back-to-back promotions. So the second year in the Championship when we got promoted to the Premier League, Henry and I had 3 months there together. So that was, again, a long time ago, obviously. But I'm aware of one or two of them and knew a couple. And I think that the key for this one, Clem, was to recognise the really good work that everyone is already doing. So I think it's important. I'd like to think that we're very humble people anyway, but I think coming across with a lot of humility was really important because, I wasn't going to come in and go, right, it's going to be this way now, lads. Never mind what you've done before. So recognise how well Nathan and the guys have done, and you and all the staff. And then I just tried to say, I always try to talk about what the players are going to get from us as a group of staff first, and how we're going to try and be with them. And then talk a little bit about, things that we sort of not expect in return, but just sort of a few, not non-negotiables, but almost the things that we want in return, respect and honesty and those kinds of values and stuff like that. A little bit of football chat, but not too much. And away we go. So I think, I like to think we pitched it right, and we've had a really good response in the first 10 days or so. I've got to be honest, we've got a brilliant group of lads, which you can tell. You can see that from on the pitch when they play.
Yeah.
They're such a together group. They're so honest, so hardworking. So it's a case of keep that going, lads. We're not going to stop that. And we've got to keep our foot to the floor and keep pushing.
Yeah. And because you inherited a situation that, as you say, was a good one, you weren't replacing a manager that had been sacked. Were you able to have some conversation with your predecessor, just to almost do a little mini handover, or is that not done?
I did have a chat with Nathan as well, and he was brilliant. Gave him a text and said, congratulations, if you get 5 minutes, can you give me a call? And he called me straight away and we had a really good chat. He couldn't have been more positive about this football club, as you could imagine. Do you know what I mean? He loves the club. He's such a big part of what they've done. And he was so positive about every member of staff and the players. He's as I say, been a big part in bringing this group together and shaping it. And the environment, I've got to say, is brilliant. There's a group of lads and staff who love being around each other. They have a laugh. They work really hard. And like I said, that reflects then in the performances on a match day as well, Clem. So the key for us is going to be keep that going. Keep demanding more. Keep demanding more. We need to see more of that. But we're very lucky to be coming into a place like this that's, like I said, in the position that it's in. If it was something different, we were in the bottom three and struggling, then of course that first meeting is different as well. The first meeting probably, right, this is how it's going to be. But that wasn't needed now.
Yeah. It's one of those clubs that where they don't take no for an answer, isn't it? They've moved mountains. There's some great people involved. Obviously, finally, the long talked about stadium project is underway as well. It is one of those cultures where I just wouldn't rule anything out without football club.
No, and they've been there and seen a lot over a good period of time now. Our chairman, has seen the club, you know, go from top to bottom and back up again about three times, you know, in his 64 years of supporting the football club. So he's seen it all, been there through thick and thin. And so, yeah, you're right. We've probably got a lot of strength from all those difficult times, but also through the good times as well. And I think, you know, obviously now we're in a good moment. We're in a good period of time. Let's keep that going. Let's keep riding the wave, keep working hard. And who knows, like you said, who knows what can be achieved.
Yeah. Have you looked through the fixtures going forward? Are you aware of who you play on April Fool's Day?
Yeah, I'm aware. Yeah, I'm aware of that one.
I don't know whether the comedy scriptwriters had put that one into the equation and things as well. I bet it was the first fixture you looked for, wasn't it, when you started to go through them?
I didn't need to look for it. It was the first thing that people said to me as soon as I took the job, so I didn't need to. Yeah, look, it's let's be honest, and I said this when I got the job as well, Clem, you know, 10 games there, I'm hardly a Watford legend, you know what I mean? I'll probably quite quickly be forgotten about there. And hopefully, if we do a really good job here, then, like I said, I'm proud of representing that football club. But I'm here, I'm at Luton Town, and I'm so, so proud to be here. And this is what I want to be remembered for now. So we're going to give everything in this role. But yeah, it'll be a big game anyway. Never mind the fact that we worked there for a few weeks.
Just while I've got you talking of former jobs, you obviously were part of the England development setup. That means your shoulders rubbed with Gareth's from time to time. I don't know if there's anybody of any of your guys, were you involved with any of the youngsters in the main squad, or was there just a little bit of a gap there?
Yeah, there's a bit of a gap. Not the ones that are in the seniors at the moment. Richie worked with Jude. With the 17s.
This is Richie, your assistant.
Yeah, Richie worked with Jude. He obviously speaks so, so highly of him, as everyone does. I mean, he's been unbelievable, hasn't he? But we're really lucky that we got to learn from, like I said, people like Gareth and Steve and a lot of top people at the FA, and they're doing great. And Gareth texted me the other day. When I get the text, we're out in Dubai. I got a text. I was watching the Argentina game, so he must have been watching the Argentina game as well. But he's still taking time out to give me a text, and he's some man, and they've done really well so far. But of course, they'll be wanting to go further, and I think they're capable, aren't they?
Yeah, well, I think that's the conclusion many of us are starting to come to. Listen, he's a big boy; he knows the rules of the game. But do you think he's been rather unappreciated for exactly what? I mean, he's the second most successful England head coach of all time.
This job is quite unforgiving, you know what I mean? And everyone has an opinion on your team selection. So we all, as managers, all feel that there's none more so under any more pressure than Gareth, being the manager. It's just everyone, there's 60 million opinions, and you only get it right if you win. So... but you're right, here's what you won now. The most tournament games of any England manager, hasn't he? And, you know, he's continuously got England to the latter stages and the very, very later stages of tournaments. And he will be, you know, when he does eventually, hopefully it's not for a long, long time, eventually when he does move on, I think everyone will realise then, flipping it, he was pretty good. And you hear the players talk about him, and they've all got such respect and admiration for him, and the way he's brought them all together. Never mind the winning football matches on the tactical side, but the way he's brought everyone together there from different clubs and the rivalries, I think, is really special. His man management is up there with the very, very best. The very best.
Yeah, and I perhaps should have set this up at the start. I ask you these questions because you were head coach of the 16s.
Initially, when I went in, I was an under-20s assistant. So it was when the specialist coaching model was in place. So I came in as an in-possession specialist coach with the under-20s. And then there was a rejig, a shuffle around, especially around the COVID period. So I then took over the under-16s head coach, but I was still an under-20s assistant as well. So I was getting a bit of both, the professional phase and then leading the group as well. So it was a really good job.
Yeah. I mean, and obviously you got a great insight into the senior setup because there is that meeting of minds. Everybody's working in a similar sort of geographical space at St. George's Park. There is plenty of overlap, involvement of the development age coaches with the senior groups, maybe doing a bit of scouting or giving an opinion on the more senior levels and stuff. So you're kind of part of that setup, hence the reason for my questions.
Yeah, you are. You're really involved, and it's great because they all, you know, I say they, that the senior staff lean on, you know, everyone as well at times, but they're great at giving back. It was such a shame, you know, it's a bigger picture here, isn't it? COVID happened because then there was more restrictions in place. We couldn't get together as much, but then we got together on this, you know, on online more, and so we still were able to have contact. But yeah, it's a great place, you know, for any coach to work there for a period of time to learn and be around outstanding people. It was a great opportunity for me, one that I'm thoroughly pleased that I did, Clem. And honestly, without taking that and doing that job, because I was in a great role at Wolves before that, without taking that, I don't think I'd have got the Forest Green opportunity, and then I probably wouldn't be sitting here speaking to you now because of it. So, very thankful for the great people at the FA.
Yeah. Well, listen, it could be a very good Saturday, couldn't it? From my perspective, maybe not around lunchtime for you, but certainly at the end of the day. It's great to talk to you, mate.
You too, Clem. Thanks, pal.
This is the official EFL podcast.
He is now 37 years old. He started his career with Luton Town before moving on to West Brom, Aston Villa, Leicester City, Birmingham City, Hull City, and since 2017, through thick and thin, and there's been quite a bit of thin, Curtis Davis has been at the heart of the Derby County defence. And, well, in and around the squad, well, have you had a little injury, am I right in thinking, Curtis?
Yeah, when we played Ipswich in the TV game, I clashed knees with Harness, and I thought it was just a dead knee. It turned out to be that I'd slightly torn my meniscus, which is like, for people that don't know, it's like a cartilage-type spongy part that stops your knee from bashing together. I had to have that repaired, just had to have a little snip on it, basically. And I've been ready to go. I've been chomping at the bit to go for the last 2 weeks, but it's just been about letting the swelling go down. It's not like a normal injury where, you know, you let a muscle heal or let the stitches heal. It was just a case of once swelling goes down, I was allowed to go outside. And fortunately, I was back outside this week and was in the squad on the weekend.
Yeah, well, hence I saw that you were on the bench. And I guess my question was, sort of interspersing the fact that League One and Two has been ongoing, with the World Cup, which is still, I'm finding it hellishly bizarre. Difficult. It is bizarre, isn't it? So, I mean, how has it been to be amongst a squad that have continued playing, but you've got one eye on the fact that, I don't know, Brazil are playing Serbia that day?
It was more at first, because obviously there were four games a day. So you'd have people just staring at the screen during, like, in the gym, meant to be doing their gym work, say, because I was injured. So I was fortunate enough that I actually got to see a lot of the games. But maybe you should have been doing your reps and whatever you're doing, but instead you're sitting on the bike getting immersed with Brazil's talent or whatever. So I was fortunate enough to get to see quite a few. But it is strange, you know, that, you know, coming in at 10 o'clock, get to see one game. You come in after training, there's another game on. Then you're getting home. It's been brilliant, as much as the Winter World Cup and the disruption to the Championship and the Premier League schedule's been difficult for us. The timings are perfect, you know, to have a game at 10, 1, 4 and 7. It's a dream. If you're allowed to get the TV remote off your kids anyway. So most of the time I've been lucky enough.
and you know, do the younger ones in the squad get it like you get it? Because I'm imagining the World Cup for you growing up was a massive event. You know, you would just be, I'm assuming, sitting on your sofa for like 3-4 weeks, like nothing else mattered. But do the youngsters in the squad have the same amount of passion for it?
I'd like to think so. I think more nowadays, you know, me growing up, it was all about England. And when it wasn't England, it was Brazil. That was it. You know, so obviously all the Brazilian players that you grow up, like the Ronaldos, the Ronaldinhos, the Rivaldos. So you only kind of got to know so many foreign teams, whereas now everybody knows every single player, be it from YouTube, be it from the Champions League, be it from FIFA. You know, everyone knows everyone now. So I think rather than being overly invested in 100% England now, some people are watching other teams with an invested eye now, it seems, or sometimes because someone from the club that they support is playing for a team, they're watching it.
Yes.
Yeah, which I think it's just modern football. You know, we're fortunate enough that we get to see so much of it and we get the joys of watching all the Champions League and the foreign football. But for me, it's all about England. I don't really care. You know, I grew up, like I say, unfortunately missed out on England at a World Cup at 94. Everyone was an Ireland fan, but got the joys of watching in 98 and seeing Michael Owen and the Beckham incident, stuff like that. So for me, it's always been the biggest thing in football.
Yeah. Now, I wanted to see if there was a connection, because you know, the man of the moment is obviously Jude Bellingham. And I was looking to when you were at Birmingham, which was 2011 through 13. He joined as an 8-year-old. I just wondered if you had any recollection, whether there was a little buzz that emanated towards the first team, or did the paths didn't quite align?
No, unfortunately, I'm too old. I'm old enough to
you're
be
not
dad,
though so. You're not though. Wait a second. You might be old enough to be his dad, but it could have aligned there if he was 8, 19, 11. Yeah, that could have worked, you see, but there wasn't any buzz that emanated around the club.
No, in terms of his buzz, I think I listened to an interview he did recently, and he was saying that it was kind of like around the 12, 13 mark that they started to know he was special. And they started pushing him up to like the under-16s at 13, stuff like that. And then he was still being the best player in the under-16s. And then they kind of, there was no limit to him then. But as like, you know, I'm slightly biased in terms of the Birmingham City link, but this kid, every time I watch him, I'm just mesmerised. You know, he's 19 years old, and it's like the story behind why he wears the number 22, that he's a bit of a four. So do you know this story, by the way?
No. You could see the... expressive eyebrows there asking the question, couldn't you?
So the reason behind the 22, it wasn't just the squad number he was given at Birmingham. It was there was thought behind it. So when he was younger, his coach used to say to him, you know, you shouldn't limit yourself to what you want to be as a midfielder. He goes, you could play as a four, but you can also play as a 10, but you could play as an 8 as well. So he kind of thought, so you're a bit of a 22. So that's what his coach said to him. And then from there, it stuck with him. So that's why he wears 22 for Dortmund, 22 for England, because it's a big thing for him. But never a truer word said. You know, we saw yesterday that he played in more of an advanced role. I think in the previous game, a commentator was saying that he got lost there, but ultimately I just don't think England were very good. Whereas, you know, yesterday, honestly, every time he got the ball, he looked like he was going to make something happen. And like I say, this kid is 19 years old. I don't think we've seen this impact since, well, obviously we had Michael Owen in 98, and we've had obviously Rooney when he came onto the scene. But other than that, like at 19 years old, to be dominating games, running the game, he's fantastic.
Yeah, I think the other aspect to this as well is, because of all the disappointments of the past decades, none of us dare to dream. But then I look at that England squad starting 11 and I think Kane, Saka, Foden, Bellingham, is there a top club in the world who wouldn't sign one of those four if they got the chance? And there's a couple more just behind there, probably a Rice as well that you'd put in that mix that heck of a lot of clubs would want. I mean, you're talking nearly half the England starting 11 are such prestigious players.
And this is it. You know, we've spoken about the England golden generation off before, where we had the Rio Ferdinand, the Sol Campbell, the John Terrys, the Beckhams, whatever, that was our best chance to win. But we've got a team right now that, even though when we compare them to a Rio and we compare them to a Beckham, you're never quite putting them in the same light. But these players are playing in the Champions League every week. They're winning Champions Leagues. They're winning Premier Leagues. They're winning every trophy under the sun now. But it's also the lads on the bench are doing it as well. And that's the difference, that what you just said there, Kane, Foden, Saka, Bellingham all starting. Okay. So replace, and obviously Kane, I think, is the most difficult one to replace, yes. But replace a Foden with a Grealish, replace a Saka with a Rashford. You know, yeah. Still got Maddison that can play. Yeah. That's in the form of his life that obviously, unfortunately, has come with an injury, but can't get in the team. You know, we've still got Calvin Phillips that once he's back fully fit and up and running, he's a fantastic player. You know, I just don't see a weakness, really. And that I don't like to jinx it because we're coming up against France, you know, and they're a difficult side. But this is a team that's gone to the semi-finals of the previous World Cup. They've got that experience under them. They've gone to the final of the Euros just gone, obviously, last year. So that's raw for them. That's still there, that experience. So if ever a team's built to go on and win it, hopefully it's England.
Yeah. And I have to say as well, they've got a manager that has looked at every which way and his meticulous planning for tournaments as well. Not, you know, willing to take the short-term hit and make an unpopular decision. But this is a man that has forensically studied winners over the past couple of decades, what their characteristics and hallmarks were, what style of play actually wins a tournament and is being borne out at the moment. At the other end of the scale, Curtis, can we talk about Derby's season so far? Obviously, when you came on to preview the season for us, we'd had the change of ownership. We've subsequently had, we've had a subsequent change of head coach. How has that been so far, Curtis?
It's been good. Obviously, I've said to you before, like, my relationship with Liam was strong. Obviously, he was a friend of mine, a former teammate of mine, but not because of that. He was a good coach, and I believe that he was on the path to being a good manager here. Obviously, he's on to pastures new, but back at Hull as the head coach now. And unfortunately, it didn't work out for him here, but I'm sure he'll go on to do well there. But coming in with Paul Warne, he's a fantastic guy, fantastic manager, great reputation at this level, particularly, you know, he's been at this level three times and had three promotions. So in terms of pedigree, you couldn't look much further, but he's a really good man. You know, he's a man of, you know, morals and about family and about togetherness and stuff like that. So he bought straight into the way that we were because we had a really tight-knit group. And he liked the way that we were, but it's just been an adaptment of style. You know, ultimately, when we played under Liam, we played a dominating football style, whereas the manager here, he wants to play football, of course, but he knows that if he can get forward in a couple of passes rather than 10, he's happy to do that. And he knows the league better than all of us. So it's just been an adaptation phase, really, between both styles, but also the manager getting to know the players, both as players and what they can do, but as people, you know. So he might know as a person, you might not like the cold too much, so the day it's cold you might want to play it. So things like that. I know it sounds silly and players should never be like that, but the manager gets little parts of your personality that he'll pick up on, and I think that will help his decisions as well as to who plays where and when they play.
Yeah, so the fact that you are just outside the playoffs in seventh at the moment, but still in the norming, forming, storming stage of everybody getting to know each other, bodes well for the second half of the season?
I hope so. But it's also the fact we forget that we brought in 14 new players in the summer. So we had 14 new players that were adapting to a style with one manager and adapting to one another. And then we've obviously had to adjust for a new manager and a new style of, be it coaching, a new style of training. So the adaptation phase has been a lot bigger than just a new manager come in. You know, if we were a group that had been together for 3-4 years, then you'd say the transition would have been easier because we all know each other's strengths and weaknesses. But the fact that we were still working out each other's strengths and weaknesses, and then a new manager's coming in and trying to work that out as well. It's been difficult, but we're there or thereabouts, which is what you want to be. You want to be within single point figures away from it, minimums. But there's still, 25 games to go? 26 games to go. So I don't think there's any panic stations just yet.
There was panic stations when you looked to be looking at me for an answer as to how many games there were left, and I was going to have to do live arithmetic in the middle of all that.
No, but yeah, I believe there's 26 left, Jesse.
Good. I'm glad we've sorted that out. A few headlines from the Sky Bet Championship, and you mentioned Hull City. Sadly, last week, former owner Assam Alam passed away at the age of 83, bought the club in 2010, two promotions to the Premier League, FA Cup final, League One title during his tenure. You were obviously a big part of some of that success. Sadly maligned by quite a few fans towards the end of his tenure for what he wasn't doing. But I know those of you that were on the inside have a completely different perspective.
Yeah, it was, you know, I sent a message to his son, Ehab, just to send him my best wishes earlier. But when it happened, but he was a good man. He was a really nice guy. Was big in the city of Hull, not just the football club. You know, put money into the university, donated to hospitals and stuff like that. So he was big in the community of Hull. I think the way things went in terms of the chairman bought the club, saved the club, obviously wanted to progress the club, which ended up seeing the club get into the Premier League. And then obviously all the whole Tigers stuff and that came, which obviously left a bitter taste. But I think it was the chairman's way of trying to progress us as a brand that we can then try to compete with other people, and you know, by having people from the foreign market or having people that will sponsor the club, that we can get more money in and try and progress us. So it wasn't a spiteful thing. It was just a case of he was trying to do something that he thought would help. But unfortunately, there was a obviously massive backlash, and the club, obviously, a club is its name. You know what I mean? It can rarely change a club's name and have fans be happy. But as a guy, like I say, he was a good man, and it's just a shame it worked out that way. But I think he did great things for the club, and ultimately he gave me the opportunity to play at a club where I had some of the best years of my career in terms of enjoyment, in terms of highs of FA Cup finals, playing in Europe with Hull City. So it's sad to see, but I think his legacy will always live on, because I think whatever is there now, it still lies down to what Assam did by saving the club in 2010.
And as you've so beautifully said, our love and thoughts are with his family. A couple of other lines from the Championship. Mick Beale has left QPR and gone to Rangers. Comes a month after he turned down the advances of Wolves. But he obviously felt the lure of the Northern Rangers was enough to leave the Southern one.
Yeah, I think I smelt a rat, really. When he turned down Wolves, I thought, how bad can things be at Wolves that he's turned this job down? Because obviously, with all due respect, QPR is a good progressive club, you know, bring through young players, and they were obviously flying in the league at the time. But for him to have turned down the opportunity to go to a Premier League club with, you know, good standing in the Premier League, I've been in there quite a few years now, that hadn't been a yo-yo club or anything like that, I thought he must have something else in the background. And albeit, you know, the club that came back for him was the club that he was the assistant manager at. And, you know, maybe he'd been looking at the results that they'd been having, and maybe he'd been told, you never know, that he's on borrowed, that Giovanni Van Bronckhorst was on borrowed time. But ultimately, he's gone back to a club where he was done really well. He was successful as a coach. The players, I'm guessing, will all respect him as a coach as well. But now he's going back as the manager, and he knows all the players. So it wasn't a readjustment of, like I was just speaking about the Derby situation. It's not a readjustment of having to get to know everyone, having to get to know the personalities. The core of the squad, he knows. And it's just the extra few that he's going to get to know. But, you know, obviously he's done a fantastic job since being a manager. To think that he's had, you know, got taken QPR towards the top of the league, turned down the Wolves, and now he's the Rangers manager within less than 5 months of his managerial career, shows what his stock is. But ultimately, going to Rangers, there's no acceptance of mediocrity. He has to hit the ground running, he has to win games. You know, there's no distraction of the Champions League. There's no distraction of Europa League. So it's about winning games and trying to push Celtic as close as you can. But I think in Scotland, it always seems that it's always the games against Celtic that will determine it, because they are massive six-pointers. And if you don't win those ones, then they don't drop too many points elsewhere.
Yeah. You see, this is why we get somebody with your inside football knowledge on. I just took it on face value. He wanted to lay a proper base for his managerial career and stay for a season or two. But obviously, there's sometimes more to football than meets the eye. There has been an appointment at Wigan Athletic. It is Kolo Touré. You might recall that his brother Yaya apparently turned the job down. 3.5-year contract, 5 years experience at Celtic and Leicester alongside Brendan Rodgers. The club say they've appointed him because they're impressed with his enthusiasm, knowledge and desire. And he was, of course, one of Arsenal's invincibles when they went unbeaten for an entire Premier League season 2003-04. Well, I mean, listen, there are no rules in managerial appointments anymore, are there? I mean, you couldn't have a greater contrast to the sort of the way in which his predecessor, Liam Richardson, came to take the job.
Yeah, I think it's good. You know, Wigan are a side that obviously they've given Liam Richardson the job after being a coach there and that modern, progressive type kind of manager. And I think by going for Kolo, that's a similar kind of appointment. It's not going back to the merry-go-round of the old names that we see and the managers that kind of have been here, there and everywhere. It's thinking something different. They get Kolo in. In a similar way to what we've had here, where we've had the potentials of Lampard's and Rooney's, that his contact base will be strong. So in terms of as a club in the lower end of the Championship, he'll be able to pick up the phone to Brendan, try and nick some players on loan from Leicester, he'll be able to get into people at Arsenal, try and get some players there, might be able to get some players from Pep Guardiola, from Man City. So he's got his contact base that, regardless of what he's done as a player, that he knows these people. But also, he's been involved in the coaching with Brendan Rodgers, who is considered one of the country's best coaches. So he's definitely done his apprenticeship, and it'll be good for him. But it was funny, because as soon as the news came out, I sent Graham Shinnier a Kolo, Kolo, Kolo. I sent him a voice note, and he said, "I've had this about 100 times today, so it's getting a bit boring." So I was like, okay, fair one.
Yeah, it's good to get you on with a little bit of a song. I might get you back for the pre-Christmas special, mate, to do some carols for us, having warbled your tonsils a little bit there for us. So the Sky Bet Championship returns. Well, it kind of returned last weekend when Sunderland beat Millwall. That was a one-off game. But this coming weekend, I'm going to read these fixtures, folks, but do check the EFL website, because some of these dates or times might move as a result of the England-France kickoff at 7 o'clock on Saturday night. Saturday lunchtime, Blackburn are currently third, return to action in another Lancashire derby. They play Preston. Wigan under Kolo Touré start at Millwall. Second place, Sheffield United entertain bottom club Huddersfield. Norwich, who are currently fifth, are at Swansea. Those last three I've given you are currently 3 o'clock kickoffs. Then on Sunday, we've got Burnley, the leaders, just two defeats so far there at QPR. Interim manager there is Paul Hall. Watford in fifth, entertain Hull. And on Monday night, it is Sunderland against West Brom. You have, in Sky Bet League One, played most of the teams around you. Obviously, you had Sheffield Wednesday at the weekend. You've been beaten by Plymouth, beaten by Ipswich. General observations of the division, Curtis?
It's just a difficult division. It's like any EFL division. I think it's if you're not at your best, you can be turned over by anyone. But sometimes, even if you are at your best, a team can be really dogged, really stubborn, and beat you of set piece. So it's about managing your way through games. I think game management is big at this level. I think the quality and the experience that we have in our squad, we can do that a lot better at Derby. But yeah, it's just about trying to get a bit of steam going and get a bit of momentum. If you can go on runs in this division, then you can find yourself up with the top two teams. And you see that it goes both ways, that Portsmouth got off to a flyer and now they've gone with one win in 10 and they find themselves outside the playoffs, but they've still got three games in hand and are still there or thereabouts. So it kind of, it just shows how crazy a league is. It is the EFL, so it's always a little bit crazy. But it's just, I think ultimately the cream always rises to the top. And I think Plymouth were a really good side when we played them. A former player of ours, Morgan Whittaker, on his loan from Swansea, seems to have found himself there with a lot of goals and assists. Ipswich are a good side, invested a lot of money in their squad. I gifted them the win against us, but if not, that game was pretty tight. But yeah, it's about getting runs and I guess trying to beat the teams around you. And we did manage to do that against either of those teams.
When you make a mistake in a game, can it live with you for months? It's not just a couple of days or until the next game. It still annoys you and niggles you, does it, going on weeks and weeks later?
No, it annoys me at the fact that it cost us 3 points. It doesn't niggle at me because I've always, from a young age, I probably would have beat myself up. When I was at Luton, I would have probably beat myself up as a kid because I was only coming through. I didn't have the experience. Of course, I didn't know how to take it. But as I've got older, I analyse my performance in a win, in a loss, in a draw, and I always look at it based on me and what I did. And if I strip the game back, I had a good game. I just misplaced the pass back to the keeper and it got cut out. So I take full acceptance of costing us the game and I've got no problem with that. I hold my hand up. But in terms of my performance level, I helped the team as well. You know, I made blocks. I cut out crosses that could have led to chances and stuff like that. So I'm very philosophical on the whole picture rather than concentrating on one mistake. Listen, if these one mistakes creep into your game that you're making one every week, of course it becomes an issue and you'll start doubting yourself. But I'd like to think that I haven't let the side down too many times this year or at all, really.
Just really interesting that you were still talking about it. And, I don't think we get to talk to players enough about that kind of stuff, because obviously there are those moments on a football pitch. But what does go through your head when you know you've made a mistake on a field? And how do you get it out of your mind and not let it stick with you? For example, a lot of referees have a kind of elastic band on their wrist, don't they? That if they think they've made a mistake,
they ping themselves. Kind
of pull it and they ping themselves to give themselves a jolt. How do you get out of, oh no, I've let the guys down, and concentrate on the next challenge?
I think it's a lot harder if you're not playing well. And that's it. So I think in my head, I was having a good game. And probably from having a good game, I was probably too comfortable. And that's why I've tried to play it back to the keeper rather than clear it down the line, maybe. So my big thing was get the ball, try and help the team. Unfortunately, 10 minutes later, I made what was a really good tackle, but it ended up smashing my knee. So from there, I was limited to how much I could help the team. I stayed on the pitch, went up front, tried to cause a bit of havoc, but I wasn't able to help the team. But it's something you have to deal with. You know, like I said, when I was younger, if I'd made that mistake, I probably would have hidden away and hid myself away and been like, nope, not good enough, blah, blah. And, you know, I'd probably not have passed back for 10 games. But ultimately, it's part and parcel of football. Mistakes happen. Unfortunately, as a defender, you make that mistake, it's likely to cost a goal. Whereas as a striker, could do nothing the whole game. A cross comes in, goes on in off their backside. They're a hero. So it's understanding your position and your role. But I won't change. You know, ultimately, this is me. I make the decisions because I think it's the right thing to do. Unfortunately, it was poorly executed. And that's it. But as long as, like I said, as long as you don't let these one mistakes creep into your game, you got to carry on as normal. Because if not, someone's going to be ready to take your place if you start sulking.
Sky Bet League One fixtures this coming weekend. I stress, please check your kickoff times. Early kickoffs at the moment are Ipswich, currently second, entertaining sixth place Peterborough, and Bolton, who are fifth, going off to Shrewsbury. It's a bit of a derby match for Curtis's Derby as they head to Burton. The leaders, Plymouth, are at Cambridge. Sheffield Wednesday, currently third, just 2 points off the top. They're at Exeter. Barnsley in fourth go to Oxford United. Finally, Sky Bet League 2, Curtis. Pretty impressive
and consistent form being shown by the top three, Leighton Orient, obviously a club very close to where you grew up, Stevenage and Northampton. In fact, the gap now between Northampton in third and Barrow in fourth is 5 points. Not a lot of losses between them, actually. Those three teams have lost just 8 times in 60 games.
Yeah, really impressive. Obviously, I keep more my eye on Leighton Orient with my link, obviously, supporting the club and with Richie Wellens, a former teammate, being there. But neither of them are letting up. It's a case of it could be that all three of them run away with it, and it's just about who takes the title. But I think at that level, of course, you want to win it. But the main thing is being in there. You know, you've got three chances of doing it. Unlike the other leagues, obviously, League One, you've only got two chances to go up automatically. I think this league, I think they'll know if the three of them could keep doing what they're doing and pull away, they might go into a bit of a comfort zone and maybe start slipping up a bit. But at the moment, they're all ruthless, they're all relentless. I'd always worry about Stevenage. They're a tough side. The way they play, we played them in pre-season, they're relentless. They're unforgiving in the fact that they're direct. They run all over you in terms of pressing the ball. So I'd always worry about them coming strong, coming into the season. But Northampton, with the upset of last year, will have a point to prove. And they won't want to make it as close as last year, because obviously winning 3-1 on the last day wasn't enough for them, and they won't want to leave it to chance this year.
Yeah, well, they are at the moment proving that they can bounce back. Friday night in Sky Bet League One is currently Crawley, who Matthew Etherington has just been appointed as their new manager and got off to a winning start, beating Swindon Town. They're up against the bottom club, Hartlepool United. Early kickoff on Saturday, there's a Cumbrian derby, fifth place Carlisle entertaining fourth place Barrow. Leighton Orient, the leaders, head to Crewe, who've made Lee Bell their permanent manager. Northampton, as we've said, are in third, and they go to Harrogate. And then Stevenage in second place, seventh place, Mansfield Town. I don't think I've missed anything else, have I? Yes, I have. Bradford in sixth. They go to second bottom, Gillingham, on Sunday. Do you think England can win the World Cup, Curtis?
I do. I do think we can. I think, you know, people are obviously talking about the fact that we're now going to face France, which is at the beginning of the tournament. We all expected it to be this if everything went to plan. France are obviously a very good side, but ultimately you need to beat the best to win it. If your route to the final was easy, that means that those so-called easy teams would have had to beat in a giant to get there. So I think we can. I'm not necessarily saying we will. But it'll be a battle of the defences, I guess, come the France game, because both teams have scored at will. Obviously, Mbappe's the poster child of the World Cup, and seems to be running away with the Golden Boot. But he's always said Kyle Walker's the toughest opponent he plays against. So that's an interesting fact, because when they played PSG, he said he couldn't believe how quick he was, how strong he was. And hopefully mentally, if Kyle Walker does a number on him, he might switch sides. He might have to go looking for the ball and into different areas. But yeah, I'd just be keeping Kyle Walker on ice for now. If I'm Gareth Southgate, to make sure that we can calm him down. But listen, they've got good players throughout their side. If you concentrate too much on Mbappe, Dembele's not been doing bad the other side. Griezmann in the number 10/8 role. And Giroud, who we all know very well from the Premier League. He's just become France's all-time top scorer. Now, if you don't respect someone that scored that many goals for France, more than Thierry Henry, then, yeah, you'll definitely be in trouble.
Yeah, you just got me. I need to finish now and get onto Amazon and order some cotton wool, make sure I send it across to the England squad so we can wrap Kyle Walker's every limb up so he's playing in that game. It is a pleasure, as always. Do you want to finish with a little song, or are you done for the day with your musical additions?
Yeah, I'll leave it until... If we beat France, I'll come back on and we'll sing Sweet Caroline, yeah, together.
Oh, it was going so well until you said together...
Touching hands.
Fade him out. Great to talk to you. We really appreciate you joining us.
Cheers, Glenn. Take care, mate.
That is it for this episode. A big thank you to Curtis Davis and to Rob Edwards. If you've enjoyed it, then please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.